Do you like yelling at technology? Listen anytime on your smart speaker. Just tell it to put on Fox Sports Las Vegas, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, KKGK Las Vegas.
Attempt blocked by McNabb. To the right circle, a try. Kick, save, Hill. Rebound, another try, save, Hill. A third try, save. And the rebound to the right corner.
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Bob boots it ahead, sticks it left. Barbashev in. Back to the right, a shot. Score! Marchessault, 19 seconds in.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show here on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Big shout out to Vince Sapienza from Fox 5 for jumping on with us in that first hour, and Ashley Watkins, one half of Sam and Ash, just talking to me a few minutes ago. I'm not going to say it because I don't know how to say it. What is it? Sticks down, pucks drop. I don't know. Darren Millard joins us, ladies and gentlemen. What's that saying that you like to say?
What are you talking about?
Well, what is it? Pucks down, sticks up, I don't know. What do you always say when you come on?
What happens at a face-off?
Pucks down.
Oh, sticks down.
Yeah,
drop pucks puck.
Drop. Yeah, sticks down, drop
there's
puck.
Not, there's not multiple pucks.
Okay.
It's puck.
Puck.
But
well,
be careful when you say that.
Yes, well, I know.
Right?
Believe me.
As somebody who's made that mistake before.
The thought crossed my
delay's
mind.
Delay's on. You guys are good.
Yeah.
It's
thanks.
It's not good. Well, the delay wasn't on the first time I did that, I can tell you.
And listen,
that for sure.
You know that that's one of my favorite words when I'm with my gaggle of friends up in the press box. So.
Puck?
No, the other word.
Oh, see, now you're going to get us into trouble.
Yeah, well.
Now you, oh, my God. I was listening at the end of the last hour.
Yes.
And I honestly thought you were off air talking to our good friend. Because you were so casual discussing things that you wish that you hadn't done in your life. Regrets.
Yeah, jumping off of a pier in Newport Beach was one of them.
Yeah. Because I jumped in, put the headset on in the middle of it. I'm like, hello, Chapman. Hello, and I was mocking you. I was making fun of you.
Yes.
As you were talking about that, but my mic wasn't up, and you were talking to Ash, and it was on the air. But I honestly thought that you guys were just reminiscing about past life travels.
Yeah, I love talking to Ash because she's so cool. Like she's so she's got so much that she's can talk about food. She loves Formula One.
Yeah, speed demon.
Massive sports fan. So there's a lot that we can talk about when she's on.
And she's my lawyer.
That's
her
good.
Her and Sam are my lawyer.
They're good lawyers to have.
They are. Trust me on that. We're in a real dogfight right now. They're going to bat for me, and I tell them all the time, thank you for not forgetting about me. Big win last night over the Chicago Blackhawks. Interesting game. Great job on the pregame show and the postgame show.
Thank you.
Heard from a couple of people. Our friend Steph. Found me last night, and or we bumped into each other at the press conference, and she offered praise, and I said, well, it's great that Chapman's doing it, and he's staying in his lane, and he's doing a fabulous job at it, because the sort of personal desire, once you gain some confidence, is to spread your wings a little bit, and that's when people get caught, and you're doing a great job, Chapman, in filling in for Ryan Wallace. So really commend you on everything that you're doing in the pre and the post game. I thought that Vegas really got going back half of that first period, maybe the last 7 minutes, and after that they played a pretty controlled hockey game.
Yeah, I thought the turning point, I mentioned that in one of the intermissions, was they took the penalty. William Karlsson goes to the box for the hook, and Jonas Rombierg had an opportunity, shorthanded opportunity. I think he just ran out of real estate. But it seemed like from that moment on, that was a bit of a turning point. The team gained some confidence, and he played a really good game last night. And I thought that was kind of the catalyst in turning things around in their favor. And, you know, sometimes it takes something like that, even though he didn't score. The team seemed to really kind of pick up the pace after that.
The transition game last night, about 12 minutes into the first period, got going.
It was a fun game, I thought.
Odd man rush after transition-type opportunities. Down the ice they went, and they really got some confidence going. during that point. And then they managed to score the first goal, which was huge. And they weren't chasing the game. There wasn't any anxiety about it. And given who was not in the lineup, that was a game, coupled with the fact that you're playing a team that's completely out of it and you're coming off the high of clinching a playoff spot. There's multiple reasons why you would be concerned about that result. And Vegas managed to chip away at the different challenges and were able to check all the boxes. I thought Zach Whitecloud played a great game. That was a thunderous hit along
yes.
the near boards, opposite you, almost kitty corner to where you sit.
I didn't know that.
The games.
I had never seen him hit someone like that.
Well, then Nick Hague has stepped up, and you mentioned this in hour number one, on Connor Bedard, who just looked up. Prior to that hit, and that was a moment. It was funny. Whitecloud was challenged to a scrap right after he laid the hit, and I didn't see anybody come over to Nick Hague. Well,
no,
after that hit, probably smart of that. I thought it was great that that Zach just played the hockey and kept going. You don't want to, at this point, drop your gloves in a needless fight that has nothing to do with you at all, and put yourself in any type of a jeopardy going forward. But those two guys, they're not partners right now. But I thought it was really encouraging. Talked to Nick today, just after the team photo. Actually, we were taking the team photo. Getting ready, the Golden Knights are so fantastic to allow the staff to get in the team photo every year. And once they do the players and the equipment staff and the traditional team picture, all of us got to jump in. And I just happened to be behind Bill Foley and with Dave Gosher behind Mark Stone, but we were right in front of Nick Hague. So there won't be any issues seeing Nick
yeah.
at all. Because he's on skates, and I said to him, you caught the kid last night. And he said, what? And I'm like, how do you forget that? Like, it was the biggest hit of the game. And he said, well, I think it looked worse than what it was. He thought that the Bedard was able to prepare for it. But I thought that added some intensity into the game with back-to-back hits within about, 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Each other last night in the second period?
Yeah, I think Nick had another big hit behind the net, if I'm not mistaken, as well. But the Whitecloud hit was thunderous, as you mentioned. And it surprised me that someone would challenge him to a fight because it was clean. There was nothing in it. That
doesn't matter.
No, but...
You know that.
No, but it should. I mean, I'm not a believer...
You, but you know that that doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I'm not a believer in... Let's take fighting out of the game.
Another first-year player, another kid that got hurt.
Was it? Was
hit,
it?
So
Nazar?
Yeah.
Boy, that kid, he's quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed watching him. I mean, I noticed him a bit more. And I know Bedard had the assist, but I noticed Nazar a bit more than I noticed Bedard out there last night. But yeah, that was a big hit by Zach. And you know, I the funny thing is, the guy who's known for the big thunderous hits had one of the prettiest goals of the season yeah. for the Golden Knights, and that was Braden McNabb.
Night.
Yeah, no kidding. But, like, I know Braden always talked about having offensive skill when he was in juniors.
He was. He did.
But like,
the
every
Kootenai
year,
ice, he was great.
And Vince Sapienza brought this up, it seems like every year Braden McNabb pulls a rabbit out of a hat and scores just a beautiful goal. And last night was the one, his fourth of the season. I believe he's up to 27 points on the season.
It's career high.
Yeah, I mean, and I think a career low in penalty minutes as well. So really spectacular job of him stepping up with all the injuries along the blue line. He's been the one constant, and he's having maybe his best season in the NHL.
Well, he is, statistically. That's happening.
Yeah.
So that partnership, Shea Theodore and Braden McNabb. Theodore has one penalty this year. It was a double minor.
Yes.
But he has,
by the way,
one penalty.
One game after you said to me.
Yeah, don't blame me.
Listen, don't, I mean, I don't.
No, just let me complete the thought here. And McNabb has 37 penalty minutes. So you made him out to be a Lady Bing contender. he's not going to be that.
No, but, I mean, this is the guy who generally is in the high 40s and low 50s in terms of penalty minutes. But
are you making that up or do you know that?
No, I've looked at his
okay.
his numbers.
Okay,
but You know, you mentioned Theodore's one penalty, and I think it was off the air.
Was that conversation on the air or off the air?
I don't remember if it was on or off, but
I think it was off the air. And now you're throwing me under the bus.
Well, listen, only with Rita, because Rita will be the one to complain.
So this is the backstory, everybody. I mentioned to the guys, and it may have filtered on the air.
It probably did.
But Shea Theodore was, if he was able to keep his penalty-free streak alive this season, he hasn't played every game. He's going to play just over almost two-thirds of the season. But if he was able to keep it penalty-free, he was going to set the National Hockey League record for most points by a player without a penalty. And he would have had his name in the record book. Bill Quackenbush, I think, is the guy that has the record. And Darren Elliott and I were talking about it on TV. That's where I talked about it on the air. But I mentioned that to Chapman, and then a couple of games later, sure enough,
yeah,
it happens. And he gets the double minor. But he still only had one penalty this year. Two, if you count it, but only one penalty at a stoppage. So.
Now, by the way, McNabb, last year, 51 penalty minutes. His career low was 40 in 2019-20, but he only played 71 games that season. But a couple seasons in the 50s, one season with 92 penalty minutes. That was really early in his career. But
had a 16-minuter in a half a season during COVID, which was 38. So He's about the same level right now.
Yeah, so, I mean,
you're trying to just make sure that everybody knows that you were right.
Well, of course. Okay. I wouldn't do it any other way.
37 penalty minutes is still not going to win you the gentlemanly player. And I'll be honest, I wouldn't want Braden McNabb to win gentlemanly player.
No, you don't like that trophy, do you?
No, well, I don't like that trophy. I don't like this. I'll be fully 100% honest with you. If I was going to get rid of any trophy, it would be the Selke.
Yeah, you hate that one,
I think,
too.
There is sportsmanship and room for gentlemanly play. I don't want necessarily my physical defenseman to be up for that award. I need my physical defenseman to have some bite and maybe have players think about it. Shea Theodore plays an entirely different game than Braden McNabb, and I'm not surprised that he would be in that situation of not taking a lot of penalties. But Braden McNabb, the way he plays, he's got to rack up, because you walk a little bit of a line there, and you're going to get called, and you're going to be on the wrong side of that line every so often. So it's weird to say, but I would encourage him to be in that 50 penalty minute range on the year with a couple of scraps, which he had on that great road trip through St. Louis when he fought Braden Shen, his buddy from Saskatchewan.
Yeah, Saskatchewan. Some tough guys from Saskatchewan.
So
I wonder
say it like that?
Because they're tough guys.
No, you say Saskatchewan weird.
Well, I'm from New Jersey. I don't know. How am I supposed to say Saskatchewan?
Well, you don't put the emphasis on the wan.
What do I put it on?
No, Saskatchewan. Like, you don't put the wan. It's not wan. Saskatchewan. Like, almost.
Saskatchewan.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, without starting to stutter.
We've already been working on your Calgary. Calgary. Which, you just do it to bug Ryan Wallace.
Yes, because I know it eats him up.
And I'm fine with that. If you're just doing it to bug people, you're playing my ball game.
Yeah, I mean,
you're very involved with. Theodore, 18 minutes last year in penalties in 55 games, 24 in almost a full schedule a couple of years ago. So, yeah, a lot less compared to what we've got from Braden McNabb. But different type of games and different type of styles with them. You're right, though, and what Vince talked about with Braden when he played in the Western Hockey League with the Kootenai Ice, had some get up and go to his offensive game. And it's still there. Like, you'll see him rip a shot and go post and in, or put himself in a position to make a great pass and set somebody up. Like, it's all there. I thought it was a great comment from Bruce in the post game last night, where at some point when you come into the league, you got to find your niche and what's going to get you in the league fastest. And if that gets you in the league, sometimes that's what you become as a player. And Braden McNabb has certainly filled that role of physical defender, more defensive, stay at home, but the ability to still contribute. Zach Whitecloud plays a very similar style. Alec Martinez, probably not as physical as the two of them, but still has some offensive game. All 7-8 guys on the Vegas Golden Knights, eight NHL defensemen that are up right now, all have offensive abilities in their game. Not all of them are looked upon to bring that every night. But if it's there, they're able to finish, which is great. One area of Braden, and I'll tell you just a story in facing him, he's got this changeup to his game, and Phil Kessel's got the best I've ever seen it, where he comes down and it looks like he's going to rip a wrist shot at you. And he somehow hides it, and it looks like what you'd face as a batter, and the pitcher is able to hide the changeup delivery, and it looks like a fastball coming out of his hand, and then it just waffles in on you. Braden McNabb is second best I've ever seen do it. And he's actually scored a couple of goals like that in the NHL. And Mark Stone talked about it. It was a couple of years ago, but Mark Stone talked about it during a post-game interview and just mentioned that he tried to do that, and it was fun to see him do that in a game. But nobody picked up on it because everybody thought he was just having some fun with the off-speed. But Braden McNabb can do that and has done it on purpose, where he'll look like he's going to snap one 100 miles an hour from 15 feet, and he'll send this little 60-mile-an-hour changeup for you, and it totally baffles and throws everybody off.
Yeah, what I notice about him is occasionally he does get a lot of space, and I think because sometimes people don't think he's going to shoot, but he's really good at walking in a bit and putting the puck on net. Like there's something about his game that is very deceptive, and I don't know if it's because he's a big guy and he's known for being a bit of a bruiser, but like I feel when teams don't respect his offense, he makes them pay.
Yeah, but the reason why he's not often up is because he does and has to play a bit of a safety net, but he's not always with Shea. At times, it's probably more when he hasn't been with Shea that we see that side of his game where he gets a little bit more aggressive offensively. Last night was interesting because it wasn't just aggressive. He was pushing it right down beside the net and was there for the rebound. Like you don't get much outside of being Wayne Gretzky behind the net doing that move. You don't get any more aggressive for a defenseman being in that situation, because if the puck hops out, you're caught. And you got to have some real faith in your line mates and the forwards to be able to back up and cover off on you. But that was great instincts by Braden last night to be able to score that goal. And it was a nothing game as far as clinching a playoff spot goes. Still has an influence regarding seeding. But, boy, did they get some offense last night from depth guys between McNabb and Amadio, and then Nick Waugh, who scored two in two games since he's come back. So is that not what we saw last April, May, and June from this team? At times, you were able to, if your stars were being checked to the max, other guys would step up. And as much as the McNabb goal was beautiful in the spinorama, that Amadio snipe coming down the wall, a guy that was back in the lineup, was a huge confidence booster for Michael.
Yeah, well, on that play, too, it starts with a great defensive play by Michael. And
knocks down a puck, right?
Yeah, and then I don't think he got credit for a takeaway.
No, it was more of a block shot anyway.
Okay, but it's still a great defensive play by Michael. And what I love about a guy like Michael Amadio, and I include Ben Hutton in this, is when they're not in the game, and they're watching from the press box or wherever they may watch the game, they don't pout. They don't let it unravel them. They come in the next time they're called upon, and they go out there, and they do the job that's asked of them. We've seen it with Ben Hutton, where he can go 20, 25 games without playing, and he comes in, and it looks like he hasn't missed a beat. We saw that with Michael Amadio last night, and I think it speaks to the character of a lot of the guys in the locker room, the leadership of guys in the locker room. And I think it just speaks volumes to the type of player that they bring in. Everybody understands their role. Nobody tries to play outside of who they are. And I think in order to be successful in this league, a lot of times, and as you mentioned with me doing the pre-post, I don't try to be who I'm not.
Yeah.
You just go out there and you play your game, and you hear it all the time. Hey, coach, how do you prepare for this team? Well, we're just going to go out and play our game.
Yeah, if you're going to try and be John Shannon, you're going to get yourself in big trouble.
Right.
Because you're going to be factually incorrect, or you're going to sound like a buffoon where you're not being true to yourself. And I think that's a great analogy in the sense of what Ben and Michael do. Now, a little different, like Ben's been out for stretches and then goes in and does a really good job. Michael, I find, at times will be put aside in the rotation and have to fight his way back from missing a few shifts. Certainly last year was the case where he would either leave the game for a couple of outings that week and then get back in, or mid-game he would fall out of the rotation and have to have that mental strength to be able to stay in it and then be productive when he got back in. I think he's been more consistent this year. And this latest stretch, he probably leaned on a lot of his experience that he went through last year during that Stanley Cup playoff run to be able to come back and do what he did last night.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with him, his game is he builds, I think, off of the guys that he plays with. And, you know, we generally see him excelling with William Karlsson. But last night was a case where he had Brett Howden and William Karlsson alongside him. And it's interesting because it's not a combination we've seen a lot of, the three of those guys. But
two of them you have.
What's that? Two of them, yeah.
Howden and Amadio.
Well, right.
They're best buddies, too. So I think that works. And it would be disrespectful to say anybody can play with William Karlsson. But he makes a lot of combinations that you don't necessarily go, that was what something I thought of. You don't jump to those conclusions, but he makes things go easier than they don't necessarily should.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it a bunch this year with Michael Mattio. We've seen it with Pavel Dorofeev, who I think is, as the confidence I think he's gained playing with William Karlsson, he's been able to now elevate his game to where last night he's playing with Tomas Hertl. And when McNabb did score that goal, Ivan Barbashev was also on that line with those two. And I like the flexibility that Bruce has kind of displayed with Barbashev the last couple of nights, where he's moved him up and down the lineup, and he's looked good.
What do you think the motivation is there?
I think it's a combination of wanting to see who he can use in a pinch if things get tough in the playoffs. I think it's, hey, does this guy have chemistry with that guy? Like, I think Barbashev's game, and we saw him kind of get a little more physical, I think, in the playoffs last year. Like, he's got that in his game. But I think we saw it amped up in him in the playoffs last year, where he was a bit of a heat-seeking missile. And I think I want to see who can play where with Ivan. But I also think it was let me see how Ivan and Pavel, the two Russian guys, play together. Because while I've asked both of them about how they help each other, and more so how Ivan helps Pavel because of both of them being Russian, I think both of them have kind of downplayed that a little bit. But I still think that sometimes you're a little more comfortable playing with a guy who maybe speaks your native language. You know, and I heard Tomas Hertl in one of the walk-off interviews last night, and he said that he does know a little Russian, but it's only all the dirty words. So, you know, you
count me in that group.
Yeah, I don't know any Russian words. But
we started off this hour talking about that kind of thing.
And yeah, I may have
English
to ask.
Variety, and we're not going to go down that path. Listen, I think that there is a comfort level between Barbashev and Dorofeev. I think it's more off the ice than on the ice, but certainly with Howden and Amadio, there is something there because they do a lot of things together on the ice at the end of practice. They've got the same routines, similar personalities. I think in that case, it does go and translate from off the ice to on the ice. But I think the combinations have been juggled the last couple of games to keep everybody sharper in game, knowing that that you were in control the other night to lock up a playoff spot. Last night was a challenging situation, at least from a trap game perspective, where it was available to you. And Bruce is just keeping people on his toes, along with trying a couple of things and seeing how it goes. There has been cases where you've fallen into a combination and you just stick with it because it just clicked instantly, or you're like, I'm not doing that again. I'm not putting those three guys together again. Nick Kyprios tells a great story. He was paired with Dale Hunter, one of his best friends, and I can't remember who the other line mate was. And one year in Washington, and they finally got a chance to go out on the ice together, and it was a complete disaster. They were in their own zone for 2 minutes, and they came back, and before the coach could say anything, I think it was Brian Murray, could say anything, Dale Hunter said, "I'm never playing with you again." It was chum. I'm not playing with you again. We're not doing that. So even if you have good chemistry off the ice, sometimes it doesn't work. Hey, just a shout out to Lily and Char, who are listening to the show. Heading back to Summerlin after a practice over at AFC. So that's cool that the hockey players in and around Vegas and the Las Vegas Valley are listening. Nate, as well as Stephanie and AC, also listening. So we got people all over the place tuning in to the Vegas Golden Knights, who insider show after a convincing win over the Chicago Blackhawks. More convincing than the scoreboard shows. Can we do our game rating now? Is that okay?
Yeah, we could do that.
The opening in 3, 2, 1.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Yeah!
Now I'm getting texts from people who are also listening. So Jeff and Johnny, thank you and appreciate you paying attention. I love it when people text me during the show. I really do. I people are sometimes afraid to do it because they're like, we don't want to bug you. I love it. I love knowing that
people are listening.
People are listening, and if you've got my number, use it and send me a note either on X or through the text line. What do you have last night for a game rating?
Well, I think it was a good game. I thought Logan Thompson played a good game, even though he did allow that one goal. I thought he played a really good game. I thought the save that he made in the third period when it was 2-1, it was a really big save because they needed it, and Logan Thompson made that save. I would have liked to have seen a faster start. But look, Chicago, they played, I thought, as well as they could have played. So I'm going to go with a 4 out of 5. I'm going to go with the Scotch.
I'll go with that as well. I thought it wasn't the most exciting game. But that goes a lot with what's at stake, right?
Right.
And, Chicago's not exactly into it right now. Connor Bedard he had some chances last night, but there was no electric opportunities on his side. I thought it was like a real business-like performance for Vegas. They didn't get trapped a lot. The goaltender was good, not overwhelmed, but really good. Deserved a shutout. And then up front, they controlled the game territorially. They didn't put themselves into bad positions. Not a lot of, if any, odd man rushes against. And they had a ton of pace up front. And Peter Mrazek was good for the Chicago Blackhawks. Just one of those workman-like performances that you need every now and then just to pile up the points. And now they have an opportunity, Chapman, to hit the century mark. Triple digits in points. And if you're telling me that it doesn't matter because they don't care who they're playing, I would say the points matter. Like, hitting that mark as a player is cool, to hit the century mark. More so, there's more motivation in that. Not that it'd be overwhelming, but more motivation in going triple digits than trying to play one team over the other in the standings, because hockey players just don't buy into that. It's a whole karma thing. As soon as you go down that path, that ends up biting. At least we convince ourselves in the hockey world that it's going to bite us.
Yeah, I don't foresee these guys going on the route of picking their poison. I think they just want to go out and play hockey, and I don't really think they care who they play. But, yeah, there's something special about hitting the century mark. You look at the East, and you've got a bunch of teams that aren't even going to hit the 95-point mark and make the playoffs. So I think certainly when you hit that 100-point mark, I think it's a little bit of a confidence boost. Like, hey, you know what? We had some ups and downs, but at the end of the day, we had a really good season. We ended with 100 points. And I think if you're the Golden Knights, that's the motivating factor tomorrow night. It's certainly not the team that's on the other side of the ice from you, although it's kind of cool. We're going to get to see Carter Gauthier make his debut tomorrow night. But I think the motivation has to be hitting the century mark, not necessarily the Ducks. Because I don't think I don't think you're going to get up for the Ducks, but I think you'll get up for 100 points.
Yeah, you're right about that. Well, not like, with all due respect, that's a game you want.
Yes,
because if you're in a, when you're looking at the schedule at the start of the year, knowing where the Ducks are in their program, you're like, okay, that's good. Where you have Chicago, that's good. Like,
yeah.
You want those games because you'd much rather have a lesser. I think a lesser opponent. Sometimes it can the teams can surprise you, but now it's like, okay, we got to manufacture something, and we'll see what happens with the roster. I thought it was interesting that Bruce said like nobody's being like held out. If you're not in, you're not in for a reason.
Yeah,
nobody's being arrested going into it, which was a very solid message from Bruce and the organization that if you're good, you're playing. A lot of stuff to play for tomorrow night. Jonathan Marchessault, so an opportunity to tie or better that record for most goals in a single season by the Vegas Golden Knights, and Aiden Hill is going to play tomorrow night. Important start for Aiden Hill. Get a good one under his belt, and then you've got that conversation. You were having it earlier. If Aiden goes out and is great, it makes it more of a difficult decision. If he doesn't, well, I think a lot of people would be guessing that that Logan would go. Does Aiden deserve the game one start because what he did last year? I think a lot of merit goes into that. And if he can play well tomorrow night in locking that win down and hitting the century mark, I think it becomes a back and forth discussion that you can sell me on both sides.
Yeah, I don't envy Bruce having to make the decision, but I think it's a decision that no matter what he makes, he's not making the wrong decision, because I think both guys have really kind of earned the.
I think you're going to need both of them, Chapman.
Yeah, I heard
the term ham and egg.
Yeah,
you're going to ham and egg it. One guy is going good. A little bit of a stumble, you come back with the other guy. I have no problem with that, with this tandem.
Yeah, I heard a bit of Dan and Gary last night after the game, and they were kind of having the same conversation that
it took them a long time to get to you.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I enjoy listening to both of them, too. Yeah. I mean, I love listening
to
Dan on play-by-play, but I think Gary brings a lot of really good analysis. So,
I don't disagree there. I just wanted to listen to my buddy.
Hey, well, you know. You know them. I just don't want you to get beat with a one of those giant Q-tips again from behind.
Oh, that was Gary, year number one. He was mean. It was him establishing his dominance over me.
He hits you with a cheap shot, huh?
thanks to Lily and Char for checking in with us, and everybody else for staying with us. We've got the one-timer segment coming up and some news regarding the playoff schedule on the other side as we continue in the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
Going to start for the Vegas Golden Knights. Well, this is what I know from the NHL. Just released, the playoffs themselves will begin on Saturday, Eastern Conference only. Why is that? Well, six of the eight teams that are going to take part in the Western Conference postseason are playing tomorrow night on the last day of the regular season. To expect everybody to turn around and start on Saturday is unfair. They moved the playoffs up a little bit, by the way. That's why they're going on Saturday. It wasn't some kind of bad planning. They just thought they'd maximize the time. So what they're going to do is let the West take a breather, and the East will kick off on Saturday with a couple of games. The New York Islanders at Carolina in Raleigh will start at 2 o'clock Eastern time, and then at 5 o'clock, or sorry, 2 o'clock Pacific time, and then at 5 o'clock Pacific time, Toronto and Boston will play their opener. I'm excited about those two rivals going toe-to-toe with each other. That's on Saturday. There's a chance that the West will start on Sunday, depending on the matchups. And we don't know whether Vegas, they'll be on the road, whether they will go on Sunday or Monday. There's a couple of theories at play, depending on which team Vegas plays, when they will start. I won't get into that because sometimes people will hear something and they won't know it's a theory, and then they'll take it as factual, and then it'll get out, and then everybody's all confused. But I believe there will be at least one game, maybe two, Western Conference games on Sunday. Right now, nothing scheduled because they don't know all of the matchups yet. They're waiting to see. Sunday, however, we'll have a couple of Eastern Conference series, the remaining Eastern Conference series. So Tampa against Florida, that one goes at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. Ooh. And then Washington against the Rangers at noon Pacific time. What does that do? That clears the entire schedule for Sunday afternoon and evening for the Western Conference. So that's where I believe that we will get some kind of Western Conference content on Sunday. Just depends on what the matchups are and if anybody has any arena availability issues. But the playoffs officially will kick off on Saturday. Islanders and Carolina will be game number one, followed by Toronto and Boston. That Eastern Conference is loaded. The Islanders, Carolina is sneaky. Not a lot of history there, but sneaky because of the expectations of Carolina and then Patrick Roy. Two intense coaches between Patrick and Roddy, Brind'Amour. And then you've got this great Patrick division series, old school. Washington and the New York Rangers, that goes back to my heyday when I was a kid watching those series. And right in the middle, original six, Toronto-Boston with a lot of recent history. And then Tampa Bay and Florida, they had never played in the playoffs up until a few years ago. And now it's a regular thing. And this is one of the great rides. It spilled over into the regular season with some real intensity, and I'm looking forward to this one. Paul Maurice and John Cooper, two great tacticians, and Tampa Bay is the team that's trying to hang on, and Florida, they're not the guys that squeaked in this year. If they go down 3-1 this time, it's a real disappointment, and they're going to have to find a way. Last year, it was kind of they had house money. For lack of a better term, that is going to be a fantastic series. I think I said it on the pod that'll be released tomorrow on the Chirp podcast. I think this is the year, Chapman, for the lower seeds, and not upsets, because I don't think that Toronto being Boston would be an upset, but it would be a lower seed if you had. Winnipeg and Colorado going towards the Avalanche, that wouldn't be an upset. Colorado won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, but it would be a lower seed. I have five lower seeds advancing through the first round this year.
What's interesting is you mentioned some of the coaching matchups there. Obviously, Paul Maurice and John Cooper, two great tacticians, but that on the ice is also an incredible rivalry. A lot of dislike, two teams separated by just the Everglades, basically. But I like Peter Laviolette going against the team that he mutually parted ways with just a season ago.
Great point.
He was with the Washington Capitals. He took over for Todd Reirden. Now he's with the Rangers, won the President's Trophy. going up against the Capitals in that first round. Patrick Waugh, Rod Brindamore. I'm excited that Patrick Waugh got the Islanders into the playoffs because I didn't think they were going to make it. And somehow they got hot at the right time. And
with a different goalie than they expected to.
That Martin could be St. scary.
Marty St. Louis is going to remain the Canucks, or the Canadiens head coach for the next three seasons, picking up the option there. And we are talking about return of Evgeny Dodonov to the Dallas Stars as they are getting healthy. Those are your one-timers. News notes from around the National Hockey League. Catching up with Chapman's next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
What's up, Chappy?
Well, tonight I'm doing something interesting. I'm currently at the Golden Circle TI Sportsbook, but I'll be leaving here right after the show and stopping home and grabbing my pooch. One of them, the little one, the puppy. Well, they're both puppies, but the poodle puppy. And we're going to head to go watch the Aviators tonight. They have Bark in the Park, so I'm going to take her out there. We're going to separate the two pups tonight because they have this little attachment thing. So we got to start doing things where they're separated. Yeah, a little independent. So I'm going to take Komachi, the poodle, out to go see the Aviators. We're going to hang out in the berm and watch some baseball.
How do you decide which one to take?
Yeah, I'm taking the – how do we decide? Well, the one who's more friendly towards people. So easy decision.
Just pick the favorite?
She's my favorite.
We all do with our kids. We just
Well, see, I only have one kid, so he's lucky.
You lean into that. Totally. Thanks for listening to the BGK Insider Show. Jared, awesome stuff. And Chapman, keep her going. Last game.
Yeah, talk to you tomorrow.
Tomorrow.